Joining us now from somewhere near Heartland is our good friend Al Batt, who has been on the road traveling around with the Minnesota State women's basketball team because his granddaughter Joey is on it. Congratulations to your granddaughter and the team and all that has gone on with that, Al.
Hey, boy, they're both women's and men's teams. Every player is an MVP in my mind. It was just think if you were a betting person, would you have gone to Las Vegas at the beginning of the basketball season and said, I want to put $10 on the Minnesota Mavericks women's and men's team to win the national championships? They would have probably laughed at you a little bit and said, yeah, we'll give you like a million to one odds on that because you're nuts. You'd have been a rich person today. It's incredible. And last night was fun at the welcome home party. A lot of people showed up.
Yeah.
And I stood in line for a long time to get my granddaughter's autograph.
You had to stand in line to get her autograph, too? Wow.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Way in the back of the line because we were... you stop and talk to people, and all of a sudden you're way at the end of the line. And I'm looking at that thing, and as what was it, 45 minutes or something? I said that had better not sound before I get up there and get everybody's signature. So it was fun, and it was great listening to her speak. And she's
eloquent and poised, and you can tell she got a lot of her nice, kind vibe from her grandfather. You've done a good job with your son and your granddaughter, and just really proud of Minnesota State and of course Joey too.
Well, that's awfully nice of you to say. She is just she's worked hard at everything she does, and I'm just proud of her not only athletically but academically. She's a wizard. A friend told me last night, says, Joey's a wizard, and I hadn't thought of that before, but I guess in some way. So, I didn't cry, so I'm pretty proud of myself. And I don't know if a person should be proud of themselves for not crying, but I teared up a few times. So I kind of whimpered to myself there a little bit, and you just realize another part of your life is kind of moved on a little bit, and she's going to do even greater things in life.
Do you think, now she's an elementary ed major, so I was wondering, is she going to teach in elementary education? Because if she is, what a great role model for kids.
Yeah, and I had a couple of people come up and said, she's going to teach in Mankato, isn't she? And said, we need to get her to teach in Mankato. And she wants to teach and she wants to coach. So she wants to do those two things. So I'm hoping she has taught kindergarten, and she just fell in love, and the kids would come to the game and hold up signs saying, we love Ms. Batt.
Aww.
So she is just, she fell in love with kindergartners. So I would guess it'd be at the lower end of the elementary, because she seems to really like that age group.
Because then you can still play, Al. That's what I like about the younger ones. It's okay. You can still act silly, and they don't think you're goofy or weird or something.
that's right. I've done a lot in school with kindergarten. I'm a big guy. My problem is I step on them. They get right by you, and you turn around, and there's one, and all of a sudden you're knocking one over, and you just feel terrible. And they're, of course, they're laughing and stuff and think it's funny. But it just said you have to really be on your game and alert at all times, because they get right up there, and they're fun kids. Oh, man, what a great what a great part of life. So, and thanks for asking. I better talk about birds, because I will go on for 12 days about the Mavericks and how much joy they brought my family. I know my wife is just, she's still on a high after last night, just being there and seeing everybody and talking to friends and relatives and everything else that showed up. And make friends with all the parents and grandparents and cousins and all the assorted relations, friends that travel with the Mavericks. So that's a real blessing, too. And Gail and I were talking about how cool the bus drivers are.
Oh.
To, go around with them. You know, we don't think about the bus drivers.
Yeah.
We thank the Maverick Machine, who is just like the best band ever, and the cheerleaders, and you thank everybody, you know, the coaches and the administration. We forget about the bus driver. Boy, who has a more important job than
You're
to
right.
get them everywhere on time and safely? And
yeah.
Boy, I just appreciate those people. I'm sure sometimes they'd like to just relax and maybe watch a game, but they got to do all the other stuff. I'm sure it's a real learning experience for them. They probably hear things they never thought they'd ever hear, but it's fun. You know, owls are stars, too. They come out at night, and a great horned owl flew in front of my car in the late night.
Uh-oh.
And that wakes you up in a hurry when all of a sudden this thing right in front of your car. Why do owls do that? Because they find roads to be prime hunting locations. So, but in this case, thankfully, an owl car collision was avoided. I'm going to knock on wood that I've never hit an owl. I'd have to go into therapy probably if I did hit one. And, I'd be the only one in my group that would come up and tell a story about hitting an owl. These other ones would have all these horrendous stories to tell, and mine would be, to me, horrendous, I guess. And weather, you know, winter went into hiding. Most of the winter, it just kind of laid back and hid. And May came early this year. Boy, we had May. It was May weather. And then came the end of March and the first part of April, and it's snowy and it's cold. And I was stationed at the edge of a lake, an intersection with nature. If there's ever an intersection with nature, right along a lake, that's it. And I was ready to be astounded by all I might experience. And it was snowing. Snow was gathering on my binoculars, and Canada geese flew in for a water landing, and I think of geese as accomplished flyers, but I don't think of them as fancy aerialists. They aren't designed for fancy feats of flying. But some of the geese coming into water used a tricky technique to slow themselves for a safe and effective landing. The geese stopped flapping their wings, and they rolled their bodies upside down. Yet their head was twisted enough so it stayed right side up, so the head stayed where it was supposed to be while the body flipped upside down. And they remained right side up on the head, and the bodies again upside down, and then they rotated their bodies to right themselves just in time for a gentle splashdown. And if they'd been passenger geese, if they were carrying passengers, the travelers aboard would have applauded the landing. And the maneuver the geese performed is called whiffling. And they slow their descent is what I think the big birds wearing goose down were doing, but they might have just been showing off. It might have been the gander saying, look at this, sweetie. And oof. Either way, it was really impressive. If I'd had Superman's hearing, I could have heard one goose say, take that, peregrine falcons. It was just an amazing thing to see. I strolled around St. Joseph, Missouri area. I had lovely looks at, Northern Mockingbird, Carolina Wren, Eastern Meadowlark, Great-Tailed Grackle. I watched trumpeter swans watching tilers working in a field. And this swan can be nearly 6 feet long with a 7-foot wingspan and weighs over 25 pounds. That's no Sesame Street's big bird, but it is a big bird. And when the swans flew, the wind was so strong, it was as if they were flying in place for a while. Kent Spellman of Albert Lea said, I was working on the minutes of the Friends of Albert Lea Library meeting we had this morning. I filled the bird feeders when I came back from the meeting. I went to the kitchen to check the feeders, and I was immediately struck by the fact there were no birds or squirrels around. Then I looked over an elevated gazebo fence we have on the west side of the lot. Lo and behold, there was a Cooper's hawk sitting on the fence. I recognize this hawk as she comes around periodically. Shortly thereafter, she swooped off the fence. I did not see that she caught anything, but she has made catches in the past in the backyard. what are they going to call Cooper's Hawks in the future? And Kent is alluding to Cooper's, that name will go away. The Hawk probably will stay there. But I don't know. One of these days I'm going to sit down and try to come up with the names and maybe take them to Las Vegas and put $10 on each one like I should have with the Mavericks and become rich. So it's, I read a grad student did a study, and I wish I could remember what college, but found that they were effective in about 12% of their attempts to catch a bird. And you say, boy, you know, they should be better than that. Well, you know, the little birds don't want to be caught. So you got that going against you right to begin with. Kent also sent something, invaders from the underground are coming in Cicadageddon. It's the biggest bug emergence in centuries. This will be the first time in more than 200 years that brood 19, which comes every 13 years, and brood 13, which comes every 17 years, will emerge at the same time. Again, we will not have them here in Minnesota, but there'll be places, if you're traveling at the right time of the year, I would expect it to be deafening. Kent also sent something from about barred owls that the federal government is attempting to eliminate a great number of barred owls in the Pacific Northwest. And they consider them an invasive species in the Pacific Northwest. They originate in U.S. East Coast, and they pose a huge threat to native protected species, including the northern spotted owls. So I guess just tell people line up on whichever side you feel you should be on there, barred owl or the northern spotted owl. And if you have concerns, please let the Fed know. And if you go online, you can find a place to express that. Tim Scott sent something from the Atlantic about the clock is running out on migratory birds. And by that, it means that climate change is creating a mismatch between these travelers and their food supply. We had flowers blooming early, and things are blooming a little bit earlier. Insects are maybe coming out earlier. So these things don't always match when you have birds maybe coming back, traveling according to day length. So they're coming at the same time, and flowers and insects don't always wait for those right times. So there can be some disconnect between the two. He also, Tim also sent something from the Washington Post, and I'm going to read just a short paragraph from it. It says, "Where in the unholy heck did all these bees come from? After almost two decades of relentless colony collapse coverage and years of grieving suspiciously clean windshields, we were stunned to run the numbers on the new census of agriculture, otherwise known as that wonderful time every 5 years when the government counts all the llamas. America's honeybee population has rocketed to an all-time high. We've added almost a million bee colonies in the past 5 years. We now have 3.8 million colonies, the census shows. Since 2007, the first census after alarming bee die-offs began in 2006, the honeybee has been the fastest growing livestock segment in the country, and that doesn't count feral honeybees, which may outnumber their captive cousins several times over." So yeah, it's all these bee numbers are all because of captive. A lot more people keeping bees than ever before. So there's a lot of bees out there now, which is new. Yeah, are there more of our native bees out there? Because honeybees are not a native to this country. I don't think we have more of our native bees out there. They do not produce the honey we want, so we aren't out there collecting or raising them. So I would say their numbers are probably still diminished some.
But I do know that there are groups that, like Lawns to Legumes program, that are trying to get pollinator gardens all across the state. I know I was one of the recipients of one of those, and you get these pockets of pollinator gardens, so it's all around. They're traveling path, and that way you're able to support them better. So I think more people are realizing how important it is to make sure we have pollinator gardens and not using sprays and things to kill them off. So hopefully people's mindset will change.
I believe what you're saying is true, and I have a thing I can point out pretty easily are these little bee hotels or bee homes with all the little straws in there that our native bees can nest in. And how much difference? I know a late friend of mine in New Richland had all kinds of them in hers. They're just something that shows that people are concerned and they want to try to help. I have one of them, and I hope they help. I know there's some predators that are maybe finding out that that's where bees nest, and they little wasps and things that get in there. So there's always something that wants to take advantage of things like that. But it's great having them. We have so many native bees that are just lovely creatures that do a lot of great things. So I'm hoping they do better. Karen Sundel-Bart said she's from Albert Lee, saw a great egret. Dale Headland of St. James, thanks for sending a photo that I'd taken, Dale. Appreciate that. Ruth Hyland wrote one of my two favorite Burma Shave poems. She says, "Is spring has sprung, the grass is riz, where last year's careless drivers is. Happy spring and happy spring birding," says Ruth. Dwayne and Barb Thompson said, "Our birds are upset. We got hit with emerald ash borer. Mm-hmm. Removed the entire grove 2 weeks ago. We have only 6 walnut trees left." Bob Williams saw a pectoral sandpiper in Le Sueur County. William Marengo in Sibley County, he saw a pectoral sandpiper and a savanna sparrow. And Brad Abendroth was in Maurer County, where he saw an American pipit and a yellow-rumped warbler, and that's a kind of our first warbler that comes back. They don't go so far south, so we see them. Listener says, "Al, if crows are so smart, how come I can't understand what they're saying?"
Maybe you're not so smart, did you?
Well, no. It's because they are so smart. They just don't want this, so they encrypt what they're saying, so that's why we can't. And the same listener said a serious question. How is it decided if lake goes before the name or after it? Why is it St. Olaf Lake and Lake Superior? Lakes with more surface area, there's no set rules for this, but lakes with more surface area are more likely to be called something with lake first. The size of a lake has something to do with whether lake goes first or second in the name. Every great lake has lake first, as do many of the country's biggest and most prominent lakes. The way lakes were named was influenced by settlement patterns and the languages of those who colonized an area. There are some area differences in whether it was more common to put lake first or second. And again, there's no manual or anything. They weren't given a rule book and said, here's how you have to name all the water you come upon. A listener says, what bird could fly higher than Mount Everest? Well, the black-capped chickadee could easily. Because Mount Everest can't fly. Oh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have. I think the bird you're probably thinking of is the bar-headed goose, and it's been recorded at heights of over 23,000 feet, and mountaineers have reported seeing the geese flying over Mount Everest. And that's just incredible how they do that. And I read something many years ago about a mountaineer. He's just struggling to get up Mount Everest, and he looks up and hears the geese flying overhead, and he thought, wow, it's something else. Nature is just incredible. What goes on that we don't think of that I guess they don't have to think of either. It just happens naturally how they can do these amazing things. And bar-headed geese are beautiful geese. that we don't see here. I heard a rooster pheasant just crowing vehemently this morning in the snow. Roosters crow loudly in the spring, summer, especially at dawn and dusk. And his crow is often followed by a loud, rapid beating of the wings that close ears can hear. That, and I know I just said that they crow loudly in the spring and summer, but they will crow all year, just not so often. They are optimistic fellows, I guess, is what they are. And I'm looking at a house sparrow right now, and there's a certain degree of, is everydayness a word? It probably is. Yeah, there's a certain degree of everydayness to a house sparrow. But, you know, they're really handsome birds. And it's by a squirrel, and the squirrel's looking up at the house sparrow. And I was thinking the other day as I'm driving around to a turkey vulture, every squirrel is an organ donor. They just, I think they must follow squirrels around because they figure, well, sooner or later, this guy's going to get hit by a car, and I'm going to have something to eat. A lot of turkey vultures around now. Boy, you drive down the highway, you're very, very likely to see a turkey vulture. And Karen, you had somebody ask about a rabbit?
Yeah, I did. It was kind of an interesting question. I've never seen this myself, but someone, this is, says, this is for Al Bat. What in the world is going on with the rabbits? They have some kind of growth on their faces coming from their mouth. It's like black horns or something like that.
Yeah, and it's a dreadful thing to see. You know, you look at it and think, oh my gosh, this is a terrible thing. It's called papilloma. I hope I'm right on the name. It's growths on the skin. They're caused by a virus. And they really have no significant effect on this. They only affect cottontail rabbits, nothing else. So nothing else can get it. And it has no significant effect on that wild rabbit. I would guess it might mess up their dating profile a little bit for a while, but other than that said, if they get so serious that it would interfere with their eating or drinking, then it could have a problem. But for the most part, and they're black nodules on the skin, and as the listener, sometimes they take on a horn-like appearance. Oh. So described it perfect. These elongated things, and it's usually around the head, and that's usually where we see it. And it's papillomas, and it would be a papilloma virus. And it's, again, it's specific, doesn't cause this disease in any other species, and they're kind of waxy black tumors. And I read somewhere that it's made up of keratin for the most part, so like our fingernails. And so it's, I bet, and I'm just throwing this out there, I bet maybe that's where the origin of the mythical jackalope came from. Because they get that horn-like look. You know, wonder, was some guy just sitting around one day, maybe in a bar or something, and in the old days, and he thought he'd just get everybody going by telling him he saw this thing, and all of a sudden they named it the jackalope, and it went on from there. Now you get out west, South Dakota on, and you see jackalopes mounted in bars and everything, but I'm going to go to Las Vegas and bet $10 on that and see if it comes up. And maybe I'll win a lot of money by saying that's how jackalope started. But that's a great question. And you just can't help but feel sorry for the poor rabbits because it looks like it's painful, but I guess it isn't that bad. But it seems like when I see them, it's on their chins for some reason. It's like they're growing a black beard down there. And it's one of those things that we see. And like they don't have enough things going against them by being food for pretty much everything.
Yeah.
And they got to have this going on too. But I'm guessing it would most commonly observed at times where there's high rabbit densities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also jackrabbits and snowshoe hares can develop tumors. But because they were testing them in, again, at some college, But natural cases of jackrabbits or snowshoe hares having these have never been reported. So it was only in lab conditions. So that's a good thing.
Okay.
It's not going there.
I've got a text from our friend John. Almost comedy. When Al brings up the pelican brief thing, I get a lot of texts from pelicans. For the record, pelicans prefer to wear boxers, not briefs. Reporting live from New Ulm for KMSU. Have a good day and a better tomorrow, John.
Gosh,
that was bad.
And they look good in boxers, too. And you get that little cartoon bubble above the head, and you're thinking, yeah, a pelican can wear boxers. They look pretty good in that. A lot of pelicans around now, so it's that time of year where they show up.
Are they native to here?
Yes.
Oh, they are? Yep. Really? Okay.
Yep.
I didn't think so.
And we're getting a lot of birds. I have fox sparrows in my yard now. Nice to see them. They get down. They do that two-footed chicken scratch, a little chicken dance where they scratch at the same time with both feet. And they're beautiful, foxy-colored large sparrows, a native sparrow. A lot of song sparrows around, and we love song sparrows. If we have a garden, we have a song sparrow serenading us all spring and summer. So they just sing, and they sing, and they sing, and it's a lovely song. So it's always great to see them. My yard is filled with dark-eyed juncos at this time, but they will be leaving before long. They do nest in Minnesota, but not in southern Minnesota. And again, they're making like these toy ray gun sounds out there now. It's fun hearing that. They're beautiful little birds, and they are the snowbirds. So of course they can't leave yet because it's snowing right now. So they have to hang around here because that's their job. So it's so wonderful to see all these birds. It's a beautiful time of year, but you know what, folks? Every time of the year is a beautiful time of the year, and every day is a great time. If you can't get outside, promise me you'll just sit by a window for a little while and just look outside and see all the great beauties that are out there. I want to thank everybody for sitting on the front porch with Karen and me. I was in a large store in Missouri because it was handy. I'm a location shopper. I know a lot of them are. You just say, well, there's something close. I'm going to go in there. And I wanted to buy some drinking water to put in the cooler in my car. And, you know, in big stores, everything I want is as far away from the front door as it possibly could be. So I stumbled around a bit before locating my prey. And as I grabbed a 12-pack of water, a man thanked me, and I said, well, you're welcome, out of habit. I thought maybe he's like a secret shopper guy or something. I didn't know what was going on. And then his young son, and I could tell it was his son because they were like Russian dolls. They looked just alike, only one was big and one was little. They were just identical otherwise. And his young son came over and told me I was a hero. And then they left, and I was kind of stunned. I thought, because I'm buying a 12-pack of water, you're a hero. I thought, these Missourians are the nicest people on earth. I got thanked for buying water in a large box store. I was confused, which is pretty much a normal state. When I got to my car, I grabbed a hat off my head because it was a cold, windy day of sleet and rain. And I put the hat down on my seat, and it said Keister Fire Department on it. The city was named Keister for state senator and judge Jacob Keister. And Ronald Reagan made a crack about Keister. They did a Preparation H commercial in Keister, Minnesota. But the Keister Fire Department, which is made of heroes, had given me that hat. And I got out of the car and looked around. If I could have found that man and his son, I'd have told him so and told him where the real heroes were. And I'm just, I was like, cowboys will say he's all hat and no cows. I was all hat and no hero. So it was nice of those folks to say that. remember, folks, Heartland as well, we're driving past. Do something wild today. Get out there and look at a bird. Karen, thank you as always for your fine company. And I'm going to say for maybe the last time for a while, go Mavs.
Yeah, go Mavs. Hey, thanks, Al. It's always great to talk to you, and we'll be back next week. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.